Hello and welcome to Lot Awful Movies 25. I cannot believe we've done 25 of these pieces of shit. Wow, how's it going, Andrew?
I can't believe that leaves only about 900 more to do. So,
yeah.
Big
milestone, 25 pieces of shit. And to help celebrate this shit is Sam back for first time in a long time. How's it going, Sam?
Man, good. When I was thinking about this, when I did the old lambs that I was on, you guys were not even, I don't think anyone even downloaded them.
Like, no, yeah, those are just for,
I don't know if there's even a listener.
Yeah.
Now you're like the biggest legal podcast on earth.
Yep, that's true. That was just those. We just passed those files around to each other.
Yeah, just for personal, yeah, family and stuff.
Wow, do you remember the last one you did? I don't even remember.
No,
four or something.
Was it Judge Dredd?
Did you do Judge Dredd?
Oh man,
I think that was so. Fun. Yeah, that was fun.
You know what movie bullshit? I miss? Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
I always enjoy doing this. It's just hard to get the time.
Yeah.
You know, we have to watch them several hundred times and notes and the
You got to look up legal stuff in those books behind you.
Go to law school.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anymore. So, and I also realized poor Sam, I mean, he didn't see the pilot episode of The Practice along with us. So he has no idea. He's coming in just absolutely cold on this because this is a spinoff show of The Practice as we established last month.
It ostensibly, well, you haven't announced, right? So we're doing the pilot of Boston Legal, or episode one, or whatever it is. It's ostensibly a spinoff of The Practice, but I sure couldn't figure out what the connection was.
I think there were some characters later on in The Practice that must have struck a chord with the public. And so people were like, okay, those assholes need their own show. And none of the characters from the first episode of The Practice are in this, right? There's not a single... I don't think there's a single one.
No.
So it's later on in The Practice. I think I want to say maybe James Spader came into The Practice. But anyway.
I just want to know how Bull fits into all of this. But I guess we'll figure that out later.
It's all one universe. The fun trivia fact about this pilot. Somehow this wasn't the only piece of shit episode of the show. And it didn't just instantly go into the garbage can. There's actually more after this. That's the weird thing.
I don't believe it.
I would say, you know, we might need to develop a new scale for measuring stuff, Andrew, because we have like overall legal quality, overall quality. I want just sheer like irritation, just sheer annoyingness.
That's a really, really good phrase for this.
And we have to say, obviously jury duty will still win. But it's all... It's like you said with Babe Ruth, like any new metric you come up with for baseball, make sure Babe Ruth is number one all time. Right. Same with jury duty, any metric for these. So yeah, this is the most irritating show I think ever. Like every character is about as annoying as it gets. Everything they do is as irritating as it gets. The whole time you're just mad. Like, what? Who thinks this is good?
Yeah, it's kind of fun when we've done these in the past and there's something, you know, comes up in the legal situation and I'm thinking like, man, I would really love to know from Andrew, like, how close is this to reality, you know, or like, what is maybe being stretched a little bit? Yeah. You could be a guy who's didn't even go to school, or didn't even pass like first grade and you know the whole thing is complete bullshit. There's not even one part of it that seems even remotely realistic.
Well, I think the question we should lead off with for the show is, Andrew, how often does Al Sharpton burst into your courtroom and give an impassioned speech and leave the crowd applauding? Three, four times?
Yeah, well, you know, weekly, but I mean, here's that you sent me that message last night, which was great. What happens in this show?
I mean, sometimes it's Jesse Jackson, to be fair. But
Al Sharpton literally has a cameo parodying himself, right? Mm-hmm. In a show that stars William Shatner parodying himself, right? And it's just like, that's why, you know, you said, I want to grade this on a scale of annoyance because that's exactly how I felt when I was done watching it, right? It was like watching bad improv night with good, you know, with a bunch of good actors.
Yeah,
right?
Actually, there's a ton of really good actors in this show.
And it was just like, why? What are they doing? Right? Like, I just, I couldn't, I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, is that supposed to be funny, right? Like, this is, so we should say, this is another David E. Kelly, right?
Really?
You know, it is, you know, and like, it's kind of the anti-Ally McBeal, right? Like, it is, like, clearly, it's meant to be even more silly than Ally McBeal.
Yeah,
and
but
it is,
in a fucking, like Ally McBeal at least is a little bit charming and it's goofy
it was
here
delightful,
and there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we laughed a couple times. This is just like, fuck every character. I hate all of them. And not in an Arrested Development way, like just a fucking obnoxious way. You know, another thing related to the practice. Remember when last month Andrew and I were noting that the practice, you know, they cast an actual kind of normal human being as one of the lead roles. And that was kind of cool. Just a normal looking person, you know, not like a Hollywood model kind of thing. This show said, okay, fuck that. We're not, every single person is a model. Like every single girl, like female attorney is the most attractive person. That's actually the top four most attractive women in the world.
I mean, I had to look up the actor who plays, I don't even know her name, but like I just have
Lake
her
Bell.
As Lake Bell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every
I'm a
scene.
Fan.
Yeah, of course, because every scene is shot like, oh, okay, like I know where this workplace porn is going, right? Like, I mean, it's 8 seconds away.
You know how they have the boom mic guy too? He's always, you never think about that. There's some poor guys like holding up a heavy ass boom mic through every scene. They also must have had the cleavage boom operator. Like they're just pulling Lake Bell's cleavage up. There's probably a guy above, you know, that was like, yeah, like had to. Some sort of wire system, I think, just holding up her cleavage as high as possible every single scene.
You know how when we watched 12 Angry Men and we commented on the cinematographic brilliance and how throughout the movie, right, the camera angle changes, right, to heighten the tension.
Oh, yeah.
Lake Bell is always shot from the perspective of a 3-year-old, right? Like, I mean, it is the camera is dollied in at about 2.5 feet and shot directly up at her midsection. It's kind of, I mean, I'm not
still
kidding.
Very like, interested in boobs, like a little,
well,
there's the phases, like early boob interest and then later in life boob interest.
In fairness, a food source.
Yeah, exactly.
Time. So, you know, it's
and so everyone's
it's
a model.
Hungry, it is hungry 2-year-old camera.
Everyone's a model except Shatner. But, you know, to be fair, in the 60s, he's kind of a heartthrob. You got to hand Shatner that. So he's grandfathered in. And then so we start off here and we've got it's just irritation. I just wrote this in blood. Like, I'm just so mad at this stupid fucking scene. They're getting together for a meeting. And James Spader, what is it with James Spader? He has exactly one character he ever is, and it's psychopathic asshole that somehow no one, you know what I mean? Like, every scene with James Spader in this show should just be every other character being like, dude, what? What the fuck? You're an asshole. Get out of here. Who hired this guy?
I honestly think, right, and I had to look on Wikipedia to figure out, because I was pretty sure that House debuted, you know, a couple of years before this. It really feels like they were going for a, like, knockoff House character, right? Like, it James Spader is, you know, he's meant to be, like, sort of total irredeemable curmudgeon asshole. Even, you know, like there's a line at the end about how he, you know, patronizes hookers and all of that. And, you know, like in House, it works, right? Like, and everybody loves House because Hugh Laurie is a goddamn genius. And
Sam and I, not big
it,
House fans, but that's okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like those characters. I don't need to see.
Yeah, it's the
oh,
same
he's the
character.
Biggest asshole in the fucking world, but everybody's dependent on him because he's a super genius. I don't. Yeah. I don't need. That's yeah. not.
No,
real.
I. That's right. I.
It's
I
a trope that I'm not a fan of. It's okay. Lots of House fans.
I seem to recall that. But
we're
in event,
the minority.
This is not done.
Here's
well,
the thing, though. Right? Here's what I'll say. I'm going to call you out factually. I bet you it's possible. If anything, House would have been based on this because, as I was saying, James Spader's character was in The Practice. In a late season, which was before before House. So could be the other way around. But as you say, I will wholeheartedly agree with you that in this episode, at least, it's not done in a way where it's like, oh, he has redeeming qualities. Like, no, he's just, you wouldn't hire this guy. You can find other lawyers. It's not, you know, like You're not going to interview this guy and be like, he's literally, the show starts with him walking into a meeting, taking someone's stuff on the table and throwing it to another spot. And then that guy's like, oh, I was sitting there. And then he's like, well, yeah, I saw stuff there. And so I threw it to a less desirable place. Like, what? You're fucking fired. Yeah. We don't want that. Right. What are you, like a serial killer? Like, who would do that? Where's the charm of that?
I like, tell us how you really feel, Tom. but B, I think I want to caption this Lord Awful Movies. It's not hard to find. There are other lawyers, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, that is absolutely, like, we've talked about how, like, so, you know, in The Firm, like, the fundamental underlying conceit that makes no sense is you don't have attorney-client privilege to help your client commit crimes, right? That makes the whole thing makes no sense. The underlying conceit in this is, this is not the only law firm on earth, right? Yeah. Like, literally no clients would ever go to this law firm ever for any reason.
How many crimes committed in this one? Did you keep a tally?
The whole episode is a hate crime against humanity. Yeah. But we need a little running timer of. We're never going to get to any of these scenes.
I know. So the lawyers, the meeting scene. You see, James Spader is an asshole, so there's that. And then Shatner, this is great, never explained. He just runs the meeting in, like, the worst possible way. And then I got to ask you this. I'm actually genuinely curious, Andrew. Does the law office, they also practice in London and Tokyo? What would that be? Is that, like, the same? Are there a lot of international law firms that would meet together?
Yeah, so actually, this is fairly realistic, right, for the time period, right? Like, the mid-2000s is right about the time when big law firms, you know, Covington and Burling types, were expanding with international offices. So, so that is in a microcosm, right? Like, is trying to set up, like, what this law firm is, right? And so that's the way you need to think about it. This is meant to be Covington and Burling. It's meant to be an international law firm with, you know, hundreds of lawyers in offices, you know, around the world.
Here's my point, though. You've got the London and Tokyo guys on the TV meeting. And for a second, we'll ignore that William Shatner is being a fucking asshole for no reason. Like, the worst mismanagement. It'd be like he walked into a factory he's in charge of the factory. And he's like, oh, let's just blow up the factory. Don't give a shit. Oh, you know why? Because I'm great and everyone loves me, so I can do whatever. So he runs the meeting in the worst possible way. But forget about that. What is this meeting where, like, I could see a meeting in a firm where everyone's like, okay, update on your cases and what, okay, this motion was filed and this. But, like, what is the London and Tokyo guy going to say? Like, oh, yeah, we filed them. It's different law over here, but, like, sound off on the, you know? What is the Tokyo guy going to say? Oh, yeah, we're filing a motion in a different legal system. Okay, cool. Good luck.
So now we get to kind of the second half of this, right? So we've established this is meant to be a Covington and Burling style firm, right? Now, why 2/3 of their cases are run of the mill family law cases, right? Like the kind that the hot dog law hut handles, right? Like it is just, you know,
anyone.
Yeah.
Making huge money.
It's nuts, right? Like that you can't simultaneously have all of the tropes of these are lawyers billing out at $1,000 an hour and then think, oh, and I'm sure that this, like, college professor, you know, divorced college professor, mother of two, is going to be, you know, all writing a few $100,000 to handle her divorce. Like, are you kidding me? Like, so there's all of that. This meeting would be the only thing I can think of is it would be like the annual partnership meeting, right?
Discussing like, oh, the judge shot down. No. That's what I'm saying. Like, what would be the benefit of like, hey, give me an update over there in Tokyo on how your fucking motions are going. Like, you could have
done the exact same. This is another, like, you know, you and I rewrite these movies so they don't suck, right? Or this TV show so it doesn't suck. Like,
step one, throw this in the fucking trash and rewrite a new script.
None of this. Nothing is savable.
Like, you can maybe keep like 20% of Jack from Days of Our Lives. Like, he's like the only really not irritating character.
It's a nice set. The office looks nice.
Yeah. Is Jack from Days of Our Lives the guy who's just impossibly good looking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, he's like the least irritating character, I would say, of all of them.
Yeah, well, yeah, because he's meant to be the straight
Ken
man.
Doll. Yeah.
Yeah, the Ken doll. Yeah. Oh, and ooh, he is delicious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you were saying, though, rewrite this. The meeting, they could just be talking about, like, what? Partnership stuff, you know? Like, oh,
yeah, and, you should be talking, like, what you talk about at the partnership meeting, again, as somebody who's attended a fair number of these, is you talk about, like, the financial health of the firm, right? Like, you say, okay, here are our clients. Here's our client mix. Here's what we took in. Here's what we had to write off. Here are the practices we're going to do, right? Here's what, like, and that would actually be kind of a perfect way, you know, you have it in the background, right? But it would be sort of the perfect way to do a pilot, right? Like to set up exactly what kind of firm this is, right? And you know, you could have had William Shatner say, well, yeah, and so, you know, 16 of our 20 largest clients are, you know, tobacco and oil companies and these like monsters.
That's what allows us to help every Tom, Dick, and Sally.
The best clients
exactly.
we could have.
Yeah. And, like,
and to make it even more annoying, as I said, for no reason, the London guy's like, oh, huge emergency item number one. Like, this is a fucking big deal, guys. And he's like, okay, explain it to us. And then he's like, well, and then he just mutes the TV. Like, for no, like, what is that? What is that? It's fucking nothing.
What I wanted to ask Andrew is, I mean, obviously this scene is to establish that everyone is an asshole. Like, they're, one is a bigger asshole than the next. Because you're just so... They're just so
lawyery.
That's
100% true.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, like, have you ever gone to a meeting where it is, like, sort of a pissing contest? Or are they always, like, not to that extent, of course, but talking about having, you know, Chicago's the best sex I ever disgusting.
What?
God, I had to throw
what
up.
What
was
and then
I,
that?
Yeah. Oh. But, like, but is it kind of, I could see it kind of being like that, like people competing over who's a bigger asshole.
Yeah, there definitely is some of that, right? Like, and part of it is... A lot of law firms, right? I'm not going to start naming them, but a lot of law firms, the managing partner, and that's what William Shatner is in this, right? Like, he's the managing partner for this law firm. And think of how crazy that is to have a lawyer be essentially the CEO of a billion-dollar corporation. And you say, well, how did he get to be the CEO of that by, you know, presumably by being a great lawyer?
Yeah.
Well, in what way does that qualify you to be good at business? You know, like, and so that a lot of the trend over the last 20 years has been for firms to hire non-lawyer CEOs for that precise reason, because obviously it makes no sense. But the fact that a great majority of them still, you know, essentially have a management committee that's run by, you know, a partner or, you know, committee of senior partners, like, kind of shows you the egos that are involved, right? And that's 100% true. Like, every lawyer I've ever met is like, well, you know, well, I'm really good at this, so yeah, sure, I'm probably also good at running a business. Why not?
Yeah.
And most of them suck at it.
Couple themes established early on. The fucking music. I can't wait to get to that. It's the dumbest bullshit ever. We're gonna play a clip for you in a second. Another theme I'm identifying is every line pretty much makes like 23% sense. And then if you think about it for a second, it's like, no, that doesn't make any, why, no one. Like, when he walks by, as you just said, oh, Chicago, I have the best sex of my life in Chicago. Like, who would ever say that? What does that mean? That doesn't fucking, no one, what human says that? That doesn't even fucking make any sense. What is, am I crazy? Yeah. What?
The next line would be, I'm leaving the firm today.
All right, do you have another offer? Just been sexually harassed by
not
the weird
work here.
Old man. Yeah.
Or it would be like, excuse me, everyone, we're in huge, serious trouble. This might be the last meeting we ever have now that I've talked to the managing partner for 4 seconds. He's insane. And I don't believe he's ever had sex.
Captain Kirk, are you kidding? Like, had sex with aliens. Yeah, what are you talking about?
In his prime.
In walks Larry Miller, and I'm thinking, oh, Larry Miller's usually pretty funny in whatever he's in. And no, it's right when you thought it couldn't get any hackier already. It's the hackiest, stupidest shit. Larry Miller walks in and everyone goes, and the music gets all stupid.
Yeah,
and
there's literally a record scratch.
Yeah, and he's not only, it turns out, he's not only not wearing pants, he doesn't even have underwear on. It just shows his, like, his ass hanging out. And so the whole thing is like, he's lost his mind. Because that's how mental illness works.
Did you? Okay. Can you? Do you have the music queued up?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Play this part of the show.
Cue the asshole.
So at the beginning, you're just like taking inventory of all the assholes that work there.
Yeah. This is the music.
Yeah.
Is it Casual Monday?
Edwin. Everything all right?
Hunky dory.
It's all going to be fine.
Unbelievable. So I wanted to ask you guys. So I when the music came on, I was like, okay, something is wrong. Like, you didn't, you know, you don't see it when he walks in, or I didn't. Right, maybe I missed it, but you just see him from the waist up kind of going around the table and everyone's staring. And did you I honestly thought when I saw his ass, I thought like it was just he was one-upping everyone else as like the asshole crazy lawyer. I didn't get that. I thought it was on purpose. Did you think it was like, did you get it? I didn't get it. I just thought, yeah, this makes sense with everything that's been going on the last 30 seconds. This is just, it fit right into like, was it really that much more ridiculous than anything else that was? No.
Yeah, it was like just the natural conclusion of the meeting. Like that would be, all right. He's
wins. Okay. Yeah.
He won this meeting.
Yeah, like everyone's just step up, one-upping each other, and then he comes in with no pants on, and I just thought like, oh, wow, this guy is the king of the assholes.
And then the guy who talked to William Shatner is like, well, this is less creepy than what William Shatner said to me. I'd rather see you guys.
I'm more comfortable right now than I was just 2 minutes ago.
In fact, can I sit by that guy instead of William Shatner? So he's lost his mind because that's how mental illness works. I wonder, has that ever happened in the history? By the way, he got all the way up to the 400th floor of this building, you know, like just somehow walked through the whole thing. Nobody ever was like, hey, you're not wearing any pants. But whatever. This is the dumbest bullshit.
Yeah, you don't show any other signs. You just one day show up with half your clothes. Like sometimes it's your shirt. Like happened to be the bottom half. But yeah, it's normal.
And so here it's coincidence of the century. Now the whole office is in a frenzy because there were, Andrew, I don't know if you tallied this. There are several thousand legal meetings that Larry Miller had that day. Like he was in store for a world record, like hearings and meetings and clients and everything. So the whole office is ruined because of one guy is gone. So like everything's getting reassigned. And then right in the peak of that, in walks a new, we get a walk in. It's a black girl and her mom, and the black girl didn't get cast as Annie in a show in whatever. What's the face? What is it? It's just Annie. Yeah. Annie. Yeah. Because she's black, allegedly. And, what's the reaction to this? Cause like everybody sees the black girl and James Spader and all the assholes in the asshole firm, asshole and asshole of the firm. They like, they all like are laughing kind of like they're smiling like, oh, can you believe this scum came into our firm or something? I don't, what is the reaction?
What a weird snapshot of like 10, 15 years ago that this, right? It kind of reminded me of like, you know, growing up, Sam will get this, but the like, cartoon diversity where they're like, oh, well, so we're gonna have like Black Manta and Black Vulcan and like, you know, the ethnic super friends, right? Mm-hmm. That they added on, and you're like, okay, on the one hand, slightly more diversity, on the other hand, you know, you have Apache Chief as one of your superheroes as a walking racist caricature.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of how this, like, I mean, it just made me feel good about where we are now, like, you know, because of Hamilton, and we don't need to go down the Hamilton line, but like the idea that you would play for laughs, like, well,
yeah, that's
obviously,
and the show can't
Little
decide.
Orphan,
like,
Annie can't be black.
Is it funny, like, or not? That's, I genuinely was confused. Like the reaction shots are like, oh, this is a punchline.
Yeah,
maybe that is it. Like back then. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. The hair of the girl being Annie was like the joke for white people to look at that and go like, oh God, it's so ridiculous. Like,
is that what it
like
is?
Andrew's
really?
Saying.
Is that really?
That's what I think.
I think you might be right. Cause like it has to be something. It doesn't,
because, you know, Annie has the trademark like curly red hair type of look, and I think the people writing this, like, we'll have the black girl with that hair, you know, and everyone will just think it's hilarious, like it's just so ridiculous. Because you're right, the way they set it up, like when she came in, where all the shots of everyone was like, it's a joke, like,
yeah, it's like they're about to burst into laughter, and I didn't understand it. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And then, by the way, we cut to the Home Improvement opening theme song. I don't know if you did you listen? Oh, now I got pretty much. Let me.
Is this where I have the credits make no fucking sense?
Yeah, it's Home Improvement. Like, hold on. Let me play. Does this not remind you of Home Improvement? Here's the
prejudice,
scene.
And we want justice.
Here's where it shows a bunch of shots of all the white dudes laughing.
I don't know. Just like this is 2004, stuff. Right? Not 1994.
Yeah. And like the way, you'd have to see it, but like the way the titles are doing they're kind of doing the cartoony drawing thing, you know, like Home Improvement a little bit. Like it's a weird, they hired someone to do this and they're like, fuck, I have no ideas. Let me just, let me see some other famous opening songs.
And then I'm sure you're going to get to this. I don't want to step on your stuff,
sure,
but
go ahead.
It might be a good time. Andrew, is it? I don't know if you worked in, you know, prestigious firms such as this, whatever this is, but is it like a shop, it's like an ER room where like people just are in the hallways coming in off the street and there's meeting. And then there's just lawyers that are like, let's take a meeting like all over
triage.
Everywhere. Like you could turn around, you're just getting a drink at the water fountain. You turn around and there's just a client like in your face with a meeting right then. That's how this whole thing is set up.
I think there has to be, right? Like this goes back to, right, how did the pantsless guy get up to the 30th floor? Like there are no receptionists anywhere.
Instant elevator. You just walk in and you're warped in.
There must be pneumatic tubes, right? Like the Futurama tubes that just right.
It's like a Home Depot of law. Like it's just it's like a big box.
Yeah, I
law.
Like the ER. Like someone walks in. We need five doses of legal analysis. Stat.
Yeah, yeah.
Get this.
Everything's
an
emergency. Nobody's turned down. Nobody has to wait for a meeting or weeks for an appointment.
You have to call and maybe ask if we even feel like taking your fucking case. Like.
Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah, we overlapped a little bit with the woman who we find out, right, has no ability to pay for the case and just walks in off the street to the biggest law firm in Boston and is like, oh, we want justice. And it's like, that's great. But maybe call first, right?
Yeah, how does that happen in a real setting if someone called like that? How does the receptionist or the first lawyer, because they probably have like a person who's
makes
a lawyer
that decision.
Yeah, who says like, by the way, this would cost you, you know, $200,000 or we
take
this
it
for some other reason or.
Well, you could do contingency, right?
Oh,
this firm would never ever do a contingency. Yeah. And like there's no, and this is the kind of case you couldn't possibly take on contingency because, you know,
it's
spoiler, like the relief you're going to get at the end is the little girl going to get to be in the play?
Yeah.
And you know what 30% of the little girl being in the play buys you? Like nothing, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm sure the firm gets free tickets though. That's the
it's worth
the hundreds of thousands of seats. Lawyer hours, dollars, and lawyer time.
They get to go to the first 40% of the show.
Yeah, I think it's Jan from The Office. Is that her name?
Yeah,
yeah, Jan from The Office is Michael. What's his name?
Michael Scott.
Michael Scott's girlfriend, wife thing. Really weird role in that.
I couldn't remember what she was from. I finally had to look it up. I kept looking at her, going, God, I know that woman.
Is that the Tommy Lahren knockoff?
I don't know. It's Jan from The Office. Tommy Lahren is a knockoff of every other thing. Tommy Lahren's like 20.
Yeah, no, I have her as Tommy Lahren, Cindy McCain / every Republican fantasy wife.
Are you
ever.
Talking? No, I'm talking about the client. Are you talking about?
Oh, you're talking about? Oh, yeah. No.
The
I'm
lawyer.
Talking about the. Yeah, the lawyer.
No, I'm talking about the client. It's Jan from The Office, and it's also Monk's dead wife. So Monk's dead wife, if you watch the show Monk.
Oh, you guys did Monk too? Jeez.
Yeah. It's a big legal show. Well, I guess there's some law. Jan from The Office comes in and she needs to speak to Crazy No Pants Man immediately because there's another one. He already missed the hearing. He had a lot planned again for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's got a messy divorce situation. And so Lake Bell and Jack from Days of Our Lives, for some reason, in the Smith household, Days of Our Lives was a fixture in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I still don't have an explanation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
I was a kid, but for some reason, our dad started watching it. I'll never understand it.
And most of our day was planned around it in the summer. Yeah. Seriously.
So bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jack, you know, obviously there's been 4,700 Jacks in Days of Our Lives. This was one of them. And he was a good-looking one, as you said. He's one of the best.
I just want to nominate, so far, this is my favorite line of yours from this, which is, there have been 4,700 Jacks in Days of Our Lives, and this was one of them.
It's true.
this was one of the good ones, though. Like, this is probably
a bit of ribbon on him for that.
Could be one of the best.
I always liked
Jacks.
Him. Yeah, I always liked him.
He's likable. He's a good-looking guy. Yeah. Solid leading man. And so Lake Bell and Jack are having... Oh, and we get more James Spader being fucking unbelievable asshole awkward. So Lake Bell and Jack from Days of Our Lives are talking. And then James Spader goes, oh, you two have had sex in the middle of the office.
There's no setup, by the way. You didn't miss like the setup or anything. That's just what happened. That's exactly what happens.
This was the moment. And having watched this 2.5 times and actually like went to Wikipedia, I still don't know, like, are they trying to play James Spader's character here as being like autistic, right? Like, yeah, you know, like, unable to, but he doesn't do this in court or, you know, like,
right,
you know, you could have kind of a fun liar sort of bit of like, oh, he, you know, he just can't help but say things that he observes.
It's
but,
like,
no,
liar,
it's just
liar,
selective.
But without any humor, just an asshole part of right. liar. Like, right. You just, oh, you're fat. You're ugly. You're whatever. Like, just whatever his thoughts are. And then everyone's supposed to love him because he's such a genius or something. I don't know. Makes no
but
fucking
he never
sense.
Does anything genius.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
So annoying. So, again, that's time number, I don't know, 3 or 4, when if I worked at the firm, I'd be like, hey, you're a fucking weirdo and I don't want to work with you. Either fire him or me or just don't. I don't want to be with this guy ever. I don't want to be around him. Just fucking. I'll go to the Tokyo office. I'll learn Tokyo law. I don't even care.
I want to point out that we're what, 6 minutes into the show, mm-hmm. and it has achieved finding something that's actually worse than working at a big law firm, right? Like I didn't think that was possible, right? Like I did that for a long time,
wasn't this, is what you're saying.
At least it wasn't this, right? At least there was not like our. Are you filming like under the conference table porn that's about to start here? Oh no, we're not. Okay, all right, that's it. Yeah, I leave. It's
it's the weirdest thing. And then Bookman comes in, my famous Seinfeld character Bookman. He is another. He's one of my favorite episodes where he's like the library cop that's like trying to track down Jerry's book that's overdue by like 25 years or something. He's like this book detective. I love him, Bookman. He's in a bunch of stuff. You'd know him if you saw him, probably. And he's he's kind of the main, like, probably the A storyline of this episode. Because he's got a wife that he just married, a trophy wife, because he's a rich guy. By the way, big client. Huge client of the firm.
Their biggest client, yeah.
Biggest client. Most important. I guess, millions in legal work every year. And he thinks his wife is cheating on him. Or he's positive. Like, his wife has admitted to it. So he wants... He comes in and he had an appointment with Larry Miller, but Larry Miller is insane. So now it's everybody else has to handle it. And Lori, I think it's hard to keep track, but smoking hot female attorney number like 4, I guess, is handling things with Bookman.
Tommy Lahren.
That might be right. Yeah. And he wants... Bookman wants the firm to hire a private detective to spy on his wife who's cheating on him. Question, is that something a top law firm does, Andrew, from time to time?
So, right, again, I want to make this 100% clear. No big firm on earth handles divorce cases. None, zero, ever. Right. So this situation might come up, right? Like, you have the CEO of a big corporation is, you know, one of your big clients, and he's come in and he's got this kind of crazy thing. Like, what you would do is you would sit him down and be like, okay, well, like, we're going to find the best divorce lawyer for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get that money's no object, and maybe you co-counsel or whatever, but like you wouldn't come in and have the lawyers who handle your like international banking contracts or whatever, yeah, like MacGuffin that you know Bookman does here. We never find out what that is. No. Oh, by the way, he also appears to live at the firm.
I know. He's
he's wandering around in a bathrobe with
You bring up a good point. Is this firm like some weird X-Files or Twilight Zone episode? Like it's a purgatory. Everyone's just wandering around it all the time. Like they can't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I needed Deadpool to be like, you see, we're going to have a walk and talk here, which will give the illusion of advancing the plot. Well, yeah, it was just nuts.
He's using this billion-dollar law firm as like Yelp for private detectives. That's all the several scenes of him just wanting them to like make a phone call for him. I don't know, just do it yourself. I don't understand. Assistant, rich guy, just call a fucking thing. Why would your law firm do it?
Well, so there are two things here. Number one, sometimes you do, and I have in fact engaged a private investigator on behalf of my clients on a couple of occasions. Part of the reason you do that is then everything I say to the PI is then, if it meets the other criteria, covered by attorney-client privilege, right? Okay. And if you do it without me being involved, then you know you're going to have to produce notes and stuff like that. So there is a reason to do that. Okay. But also, like, the first time I watch this, I'm like shouting because you know that the we're going to get to the plot around this, and you're like, this is the stupidest thing ever. He would just call the PI himself, and then and it's like 2/3 of the way through spoilers writing this episode, one of the writers was like, wait a second, are we just all fucking morons here? Because and then they just kind of like write it in like, oh yeah, no, we were smart all along from now until now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, okay, maybe you ask your firm to do this, they say no, and then instead of asking them over the course of I guess a week, I don't even fucking know, like it's time isn't really clear in this. So then we cut over to the black girl's mom is describing the not at all case they have. But you know what's funny? Is she says, oh, through some ingenuity, I was able to get the producer's notes or something.
No. No chance.
Yeah, I have that. I love that we all made that note. We have to fiat away that she has the evidence.
Well, it never matters.
No.
Like, I don't understand.
It never matters because the person who wrote this plot, like, has less knowledge of the law than somebody who's listened to one episode of Opening Arguments, right? Like, there's every line in court is about state action, and you're just sitting there going, like, even in 2004, like, we were four decades into the Civil Rights Act of 1964, people. Like, it was just crazy, batshit crazy of, yeah.
So. It's weird. I don't even know what the... Okay.
She stole those notes that she couldn't have gotten. Also, they clearly said, like, she's the best. Like, someone would write down, this is the best person for this part.
I am memorializing this thing that will produce instant legal liability, except not really. Yeah.
The producer wrote, man, it's too bad we're all racist, because this would clearly be a better Annie.
There is literally no other reason that I could find to not cast
Dear
this girl.
Dear Diary, today I deprived a black girl of a part for no other reason than pure racism.
Yeah. Other than having an exposition radio that you would turn on, you could not do more ridiculous.
And then the scene ends again. It must be what you're talking about, Sam, or something. Because the scene ends with, you know, that basically Spader's kind of like, well, this is stupid. Like, there's nothing we do here. But it ends with this weird psychopath smiling between Spader and the little girl. Like, they just look at each other for a good 10 seconds and they just smile weird, creepily. Maybe it's one of those, like, you know, when a serial killer meets another serial killer, they're like, oh, you're a psychopath too. Okay. Is that what it is? I don't know.
I think it's at her hair. She's got Annie's hair. That's what I think.
I think you're right.
The hair is a really good, I never thought about that until you said it.
Because it's just the Odell Beckham Jr. It looks totally normal to me now, but I guess back then maybe it would have looked weird.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure like any girl who's ever been cast for Annie, just they have a wig that they don't walk around with the Annie haircut for after they didn't get the part and later in court. And it's just This is dumb. The whole thing's dumb.
Oh yeah, this let us point out this again, as Thomas is pointing out, that time in this is kind of weird because like it seems to be the next day, but like Lake Bell will be in the same outfit she was in previously, but then she'll change twice more in between the hearings and all that. But over the course of about a week, right? This little girl is dressed as Little Orphan Annie for the entire week, right? Like it she is never not Little Orphan Annie. And the only explanation for that is that like it's just supposed to be comedy gold every time she's on screen. So I don't know. It's weird.
So we cut over to Jan from the office, and she has twin boys. By the way, flashes a picture, small detail, but she flashes a picture of her twin boys in their Pee Wee League uniforms. And they're on different teams, which I think is harsh. They got two different uniforms. Like, wow, split the twins
up like that.
I know. They're like seven, and they're like, no, fuck you. You can't play on the same team.
A lot of local Little League organizations have that rule of twins must be separated. It's just
a small, minor detail. And but so the problem with her is they're kind of divorcing. She got a job offer out of state, and she wants to be able to take the kids out of state. But the spiteful ex, who's like a comically douchebag, like a cartoon character douchebag in this show, doesn't want to let her take the kids.
Yeah, the ex is like a cross of the worst attributes of Snidely Whiplash and the dude who gets jilted from Titanic, right? Like Kate Winslet's ex boyfriend. Yeah,
Billy Zane.
Billy Zane.
Cool dude. Your friend Billy Zane. We just saw him in an episode of Community, and it was disturbing. He was like fat and with a bald head, and it was weird.
He never did anything after that. Yeah. Huh. Wasn't he
that weird superhero? Like the fucking, the Matt, the, no, what? What was that one? I don't know what I'm talking about. The
Billy Zane was a superhero?
Yeah. Right? Wasn't he
I have no idea.
It's not the Flash, but it's some stupid thing like that. Okay, now I'm looking it up. Billy Zane, superhero. Right? Am I thinking of some? No, the Phantom. The hell is that?
I don't know.
1996 movie. You don't remember the?
I guess so maybe that was supposed to be his like big like springboard thing,
right? But that was like slightly before superhero movies. You know, there was like a decade too early
just
before
too
they
soon.
Were. Just
not
1996 was not a good time to be starring in a superhero movie. And I'm okay with him still doing penance for like how fucking terrible his character was in Titanic. Like he's a good, like Billy Zane, good actor.
Yeah, but that's just because James fucking Cameron is the worst writer ever. And he continues to make billions of dollars writing the hackiest. The beginning of fucking Titanic, the good character has Picasso's. And she's like, oh, these are great. And Billy Zane's like, oh, he'll never, mark my words, this artist will never be anything. It's the fucking stupidest, hackiest crap. God.
And every line he has, I'm so glad. By the way, we could morph this into Lot Awful Titanic right now.
Yeah.
How
do you guys
I'm
remember
so
Titanic,
glad we're in
by
agreement.
The way.
Oh, because I
you watched
hated,
it more than
oh,
once.
I was, yeah. No, only once I was dragged to it and you know, it was such a phenomenon and like I hated every moment of it and
so
like
bad.
Oh God, it's terrible, and it's true. Like Billy Zane, like every line he says is meant to have, it's meant to be
the worst at all times
for the dumbest person in the audience to laugh and go,
yeah.
"Oh, now I get it." And
because
they keep
Picasso
doing it.
Was a great artist.
Oh, yeah,
right.
He's
yeah.
wrong.
And he like,
That's funny because he's wrong.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's for the dumbest person in the audience to be like, oh, he's the bad guy. He's bad. That's what it is. It's so like Phoebe can understand.
And now let's full circle.
So like Shatner in this.
That's
one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, no, that's who the ex-husband is.
Oh, yeah.
In this episode.
Right? I just had a note that they cast him perfectly because his face.
Yeah, that's
is
true.
Just,
he's from something, and I can't think of what it is. I forgot to look it up, but maybe he's like a shitty. He plays probably a shitty asshole in something like a.
Isn't that
like an X-Files or a.
Sorry to go off on that, but isn't it weird how there's some actors that are just like, well, I'm the asshole face guy, and like I just have to play those roles.
Yeah.
Do you think they're like
the guy
okay
from
with
Ghostbusters 2, you know, that guy that's like the annoying, he's the annoying guy in everything.
Do you think they're just like, oh, well, that's...
He's like the annoying, like, bureaucrat. That's what it is. He's like the annoying bureaucrat face. That's the guy from
Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Yeah. Like every bureaucrat. That's him. He's just annoying bureaucrat. Every single thing. It's weird.
Yeah. When they go to auditions, they're like, I'm way shittier looking than that guy. I got this. No, nobody here looks as shitty as me. Yeah. There's no way I'm losing this role.
Yeah, and then in stroll Steve Buscemi, and you're like, oh, fuck.
No, Steve Buscemi is usually kind of likable. He's like the likable goof.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah, but he definitely, like, if you're going by craziest face. Like,
Actually, the guy who comes in with his pants off is like that, too. He's always like the asshole guy. He's a little more nuanced, but anyway, they casted that guy perfectly. He is the worst. Like, you could, and I wonder when they're in public, like, you know, as a normal person, if people just hate him, you know, if they're, it's hard, it must be hard to separate, like, oh, you're just an actor. Like, I'm just an actor. I'm not really. Nah, you really are. I could look at your face.
I'm not really like that guy.
Oh, man. It's sort of like how it's the opposite of Jack from Days of Our Lives. Like, I just like him. He's just likable.
Yeah.
Just because of how he looks. So,
well, he has this thing where he's good looking, but he doesn't act like he thinks he's really that good looking somehow. You know, it's a rare thing. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to let everybody know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. I admire him for that. It's hard. I'll keep working at it.
We got Lake Bell talk. I think it's Lake Bell. I can't remember. It might be one of the other hotties. I don't know. They're all just really hot. One of the hot female attorneys is telling, it must be Lake Bell, right? I don't know. The one that's working. Oh, no, it's not Lake Bell. It's what you think is the Tommy Lauren knockoff. What's her name? Lori, I think. I think it's Lori.
Yes, it is Lori.
So
I just Lori have Tommy
Lahren is telling Shatner, like, okay, Bookman wants us to tail his wife, you know. And then Shatner's like, we can't tail the wife. We can't tail the wife.
Oh, my God. And I have to interrupt because for 11 seconds, like, William Shatner is getting the law 100% correct, right? Like, that because Tommy Lahren says, okay, our biggest client wants us to tail his wife. And William Shatner says, no, yeah, we're not going to do that. His wife is also a client of the firm. No, like it's an insuperable conflict. And I should have known. I was so naive. You know, we're only 10 minutes
into the show. Yeah, you started celebrating. Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, good. And I should have known, like literally 15 seconds later.
I can play the scene because I have the music. My note is just, oh, my God, this fucking music. So maybe we can do the end of this here.
I don't need to tell you that Ernie Dell is one of our biggest clients. If he wants a private investigator, what's the real harm?
The harm would be to me.
I'm sorry?
I'm the one sleeping with his wife.
and also beatboxing, apparently.
I want to make the kind of music where you get to just shout in the middle, like just yell. Hey! Yeah! Like you're trying to get somebody's, like call a taxi or something. Hey! I don't know. I would never.
You just dropped a coffee cup on your toe.
So!
But I do not want to lose sight of the fact that like the stuff Tommy Lahren is saying here is total fucking nonsense, right? She's like, well, we'll send a letter of withdrawal to end run around the conflict. We'll do an opinion. No, you won't, right? Like if you've represented both him and his wife, you cannot then be adverse to the wife in favor of the other client, right? Like that should just be the end of it. But of course, you know, as you played from the clip. Yeah, it can't be the end of it because instead of having the correct reason for not doing it, we have to have the stupidest possible thing. Yeah. And by the way, like this is like Norm's wife from Cheers. Like we never get to see this woman that Bookman married that William Shatner is sleeping with. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she's green skinned. Who knows? I don't know.
So, yeah. And by the way, we also never get to see the actual Annie, the girl who got the role of Annie. They just reference her like
that's
she just
so
left.
Weird.
It is weird.
That was the strangest fucking thing. Like, because we're just going to jump. Right, it's a TV show, right? But the judge says, "Well, I want to hear both these girls sing." Which you know, yeah, sure, judges do that all the time.
I know. It's hold on. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So,
So
then we get to the only non-good-looking person in the show, which is old man partner. I guess is the one some old man law partner, and he's like talking with Lori because you know the way you solve this issue, Andrew. The way you solve the issue of top guy in the law firm is sleeping with client's wife and all that is, okay, we got to think about this old man partner. He's like, okay, have this hot attorney convince Bookman to not want to spy on his wife. That's naturally the only way you solve it.
I think you're losing a little bit of your Star Trek cred, because the person you're calling old man partner is Rene Auberjonois, who was Odo on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I've never seen Deep Space Nine in my life.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you've really lost all your Star Trek cred now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also Clayton Endicott on Benson way back. Sam, you probably remember Benson, right?
Benson, no.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, he was the governor. He was great. He was Clayton on
Andrew,
on
stop
Benson.
Trying to make other people as old as you, okay? It's just not.
Yeah, I'm not that old.
Benson was fantastic. So, anyway.
Benson.
Benson. So, yeah. And you're right, though. He's just here to be the other kind of straight man in this, right?
I appreciated him as being an almost normal person.
Yeah. Except for the part where he's like, here's how we solve this. Lie to a client and convince him to do something like against his interest to protect our... No,
and how would you do that, though?
What do you do in this situation? Are you just like, okay, you're fucking fired? Or like, could a partner have that much power to where, you know, like, what would even happen in this situation?
There are two answers here.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
What happened in this situation is what you're trying to ask him.
There are two things here, right? Like, the first is, I cannot imagine if this bizarre set of circumstances were to come about that you wouldn't immediately, as a lawyer, like, have to disclose, right, to the management committee, like, probably have to step down. You'd have to tell the client. You'd have to refund a whole bunch of their fees. Like, it would be a disaster of epic proportions. On the other hand, like, I have met a handful of lawyers that were, like, huge rainmaker partners that I will not name here that I kind of felt like they could get away with this. You know? So
maybe
so I was
2004
really of two minds there.
As well. Maybe before Me Too. Then we get to this is a big contest for most irritating scene. This is just the fucking Olympics of irritating scenes. But this one to me might be the most irritating because it's clearly written by a man and it's having two women speak to each other in the dumbest fucking way that they would never, ever speak to each other,
so
in my
dumb.
Opinion. So Tommy, by the way, so you've got the Tommy Lauren type who is a good looking woman. There's nothing like they're all hot. And she goes to hot attorney number, I don't know, three or four, whatever, one we haven't met yet, who hasn't factored in really. She's just been hot everywhere. She hasn't really had anything to do. And she's a hot British lawyer that works there. And so the plan, I can't even fucking talk about this.
So
stupid.
Dumb.
The plan is, again, the plan is to convince Bookman to not spy on his wife. Now, blonde, hot lawyer, female attorney has decided she's not hot enough for such a task. You can't, because Bookman, God knows he's a catch or something.
Yeah.
So she has to go to fucking British hot attorney and say, well, look, I'm good looking, sure. And here's the line. I had to fucking quote this because it's so fucking stupid. I'm good looking, but you're hot. Kind of nasty hot. Men would leave their wives for you. You can file your sexual harassment suit tomorrow, but today you need to do this. Like, what? So fucking stupid.
I like how you transcribed that line. I transcribed the immediately preceding line, which is, I know you're a great lawyer with exceptional legal skills because Showtime would scoff at that exposition for like the Red Shoe Diaries, right? Like, I mean, that is ridiculous, whoever wrote that. And obviously, like, a 25-year-old man wrote this.
That was like, okay, we can't just have her be a good-looking lawyer. Like, we got to give her some substance. Yeah. Okay, let's just say she's really good. Yeah, I know you're a great lawyer, but...
It followed the time-honored screenwriting rule of tell, don't show.
Yeah. She practically winked at the camera and was like, we're definitely not just objectifying you in this show. Like, you have character substance. Well,
yeah.
But it was like the least amount possible. They didn't even do the whole, like, you graduated top of your class, or, you know, all that, like, extra, like they would do on The Firm.
Top five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were just like, you're a great lawyer.
I know you insert thing about being good at law here, and they just never, like, wrote anything. Yeah. I know you good law. things.
One cases.
So then we get this weird thing between Jack from Days of Our Lives and James Spader, which is like James Spader is going to maybe, like, he's not going to take the Black Annie lawsuit. And then they're like,
he can't possibly win. Of course they know.
Yeah. That. And then Jack is like, well, I'll pay for it or something. And then he's like, well, if you want to make it interesting, how about if you lose, you pay for it? And then James Spader is like, I'll pay double. So what is that fucking? So like you're gonna pay into the law firm more? I don't even understand what that means.
Yeah,
where would that money go?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, he's the one working
like,
the case. It's his billable hour. What is he paying himself double? I don't understand.
Yeah, this was deep vein thrombosis number one moment for me because it was like so. First, they're talking about prosecuting the case, right? Like, which have none of these people like watched a single episode of like, say, Ally McBeal at least? Like, you were bringing a lawsuit on behalf of a plaintiff. That's not a prosecutor. come on. You know,
I didn't even catch that they said that.
You know, you're not a prosecutor, right? And they say it like four times, right? They're like, yeah. Well, we're not going to have enough money to prosecute this case.
No, here's how it works. You don't know the law. When you don't cast a Black Annie, you're assumed to be a criminal, and then the other person, private lawyer, prosecutes you. And that's here's the thing. You don't know musical law? That's a different Broadway law or whatever.
They have a separate bar exam you have to take. But so first we have this 1-2 gut shot of referring to it as prosecuting the case over and over again. And then what they do with this wager here is one of the few things that you can't do as a lawyer, right? Which is you cannot wager on the outcome of a lawsuit. It's a crime dating back to 13th century Saxony. It's a crime called champerty, right? And
it might be an old word. Champerty.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things that every lawyer knows because you have to study for it for the bar because there's always one
champerty
question.
You have committed champerty.
It's like Pete Rose baseball type of thing. Like, yeah, it's exactly. Just the one thing you can't do.
He's never getting in the Law Hall of Fame ever. Yeah. This Jack from Days of Our Lives.
I could not love you more for that, Sam. can I do a half hour monologue on how fucking much I hate Pete Rose?
Yeah. He's the worst.
Yeah. Great hitter, though.
The best hitter. Yeah.
Yeah, and probably didn't do steroids, right? So you got, which is worse, cheating to be better at the game or fucking betting on the game? Whatever.
He probably did amphetamines and anything they could do at that time. Yeah. Rose could do something to get an advantage, he would have done it no matter what it was. He's not a better person than Barry Bonds.
Yeah, just technology wasn't caught up. So then we go over to the divorce case. We got Jack and Lake Bell want Jan from the office to try to make a deal with her ex, but she's like, look at this guy's fucking face. We cast him specifically because he's a bad guy that just wants to hurt me. So that's not going to work. And then I love this because again, I don't know if this is the show being stupid or time passing weirdly, but okay, Andrew, see if you're going to decode this one for us. Cut immediately to the hearing in the Black Annie case where, and this is the part of the legal process, you can break this down, Andrew, but I believe it's the part where each side's lawyers try to say as many things as possible at the judge and they're allowed to talk over each other. And it's just whoever can say more law points at the judge at once wins, I think. It's like a...
The entirety of this section of my notes is just apparently the scriptwriter had an accident with a tornado in a thesaurus factory at this point. Like it is just the words make no sense. They're being used in an order that makes it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and also the way they're going about it, like the way they're talking, it's like the judge is like an auctioneer and they're each bidding for law stuff, you know, like. What is even the hearing? What would this be? What is this?
I don't even know.
No, it's right? Nothing.
I mean, you haven't filed a complaint. Like literally, she came into the office yesterday, right? And so you would have to file a complaint, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have to serve it on them. They'd have 30 days to answer. Like, I mean, it's just I honestly
and like pretend all that happened. Like, yeah. Still, what is this? This is nothing.
I suppose
it's like the Judge Judy version of the lawsuit.
That's exactly what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my favorite part of this. The judge has prepped for it. She's like, how would the story change if Annie were black? She's like going into the plot. Well, you see, Annie's an orphan and, Daddy Warbucks or whatever. She's like going into the whole fucking plot of Annie because that's, that's what she would do as a judge.
It's crazy. And let's be like, so the judge is intervening on James Spader's behalf here, right? Is just clearly monologuing from the bench about how, how could it possibly matter if she's black, right? Like,
yeah.
in a way that is 100% favorable to the plaintiff's side. And yet, like, in the very next scene where they're talking about it, James Spader's like, yeah, we're going to lose because we don't have any state action. Yeah. And you're like, did you not just see the judge say, like, yeah.
Well, the judge says there's only one thing we can do, and that's to settle it in talent court.
Yeah, and then, like, have a sing-off. Sing-off. Yeah.
It's one of those famous sing-offs in front of a judge where they're like, well, if I judge you to be as good as the other person. Oh, God, it's so fucking stupid. So then we get, again, I can't even watch this fucking shit. We get Lori and the British hottie lawyer trying to do the dumbest fucking plan of all time in hitting on Bookman. It's so uncomfortable. Like, no. It's like when Jasmine in Aladdin starts hitting on Jafar, but worse. Like, it's not even, it's like worse written than the kids' cartoon.
Weird.
Yeah, it really is that. She's like, and your beard is so twisted. it's that level of that. I'm not even, watch those two fucking scenes and tell me which is more believable.
I believe Jasmine.
I know she's gonna fuck that cartoon Jafar, whatever.
I was like, well, it's over for Aladdin because they're getting together.
Yeah. I can't. Oh man, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, because like the instruction was from Tommy Lahren to British hottie lawyer who's kind of vaguely Sandra Bullocky. Like but the instruction was flirt with him, right? And the dialogue they put it, like, is this what the scriptwriter thinks flirting is? Like, she walks over, is, like, gesticulating at herself. And
again,
is like,
picture
like
Jasmine and Jafar. It's exactly that. Literally
I'd like
the
you
same.
To view this as an opportunity. And you're like, what?
Well,
what?
She's essentially, so the plan is convince him, like, just dump, forget about, doing a lawsuit or, like, trying to do, I don't even know the logic of it. Like you said, it doesn't make sense. But, like, just dump her and there's plenty of hotties waiting to marry you, like, for instance, me or something. I don't know. It's fucking stupid. And poor Bookman has to sit here and listen to this crap. They don't even show a reaction from him because it's like, what would even that be? They're just like, they just cut, like, fuck it. That's as much as we can handle.
That's true. The scene is like, so did that work? Or?
Yeah. It's just like, no, we just couldn't bear it anymore. Like, the whole crew and the like director's like, oh god, okay, that's enough.
I like to imagine that Bookman got up and was like, I'm not saying this anymore.
I'm
like,
fucking Bookman. I was in Seinfeld. I can't
12
sit here
episodes of Seinfeld. Like, if I got better things to do tonight than die. Like, yeah. It was.
By the way, he's also in Curb. He's a great. He's like really. He's always annoyed with Larry David, like the doctor that.
Yeah, the great. Phone like, and the.
Yeah, like Larry David wants to call him all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So good. So then we get old man, I guess Star Trek DS9 or so, whatever you said. I've never seen it, but I hear it's great. that guy, is he an alien in that or is he a human in that?
Yeah, he's a shape-shifting alien.
He's shape-shifting. We get a shape-shifting alien comes over. Yeah. Then why is one of the shapes he chooses an old man?
I'm sorry, I can't even.
I always wonder, like, what is that when there's a shape-shifting alien? Sort of like in Terminator, why the robot sent back a robot that has an Austrian accent or whatever. It's kind of a curious decision that robots
they guessed
make.
Wrong on, like, what the accent was.
In DS9, it's kind of neat, actually. I mean, I know you don't really care, but So he's a shapeshifter, and like his human form that looks like this is kind of like he put on a layer of makeup, so he's sort of like over smoothed out, right? So it's kind of like he can't quite get all the way to a human form. So
here's what we've cast you as, sir. Right? Yeah, that's another one of those like must have been fun in the casting. Here's what we're gonna cast you as: an alien that can't quite pull off a human.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly
that's you.
What it is.
That's your face. It's an alien that can't pull
off. As soon as we saw you, we knew you were
like,
the
yes, I got the ball.
It's the part you were born to play.
Yeah. So
wait, was that a reference to are you the ape or no, I'm casted the musical of Planet of the Apes as the human. It's the part I was born to play.
That's
one of my
favorites. Is that Simpsons?
Yeah, Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah. That's from...
He can talk. I can sing.
I only think of Selma Mary's Troy McClure. That's my favorite line.
Every part of that episode is genius. That's
so you
that
finally
also has,
made a monkey. Monkey.
Yeah, yes, we finally made a monkey.
Homer, people don't do that sort of thing with fish.
We got to get back to the show. He's trying to confront Shatner a little bit, and he says everybody is fungible.
Oh yeah,
seems like a weird. Why don't you just say replaceable? Why fungible?
That stood out to me too. I said I didn't really believe they were all lawyers until he said fungible. It's only really
yeah, but that's
smart
like an
lawyer-y
accountant
types.
That's an accountant term. That's not a I mean, it's weird anyway. Well,
and also right. I mean, he's now using that technically incorrectly.
Yeah,
right?
You would
like,
say
everybody
like,
is not fungible. They are replaceable, right?
They're replaceable. They're not you might equivalent. Say like, oh, people are fungible, maybe, I guess. Like a one person. You're right. It doesn't even make sense. So Bookman barges in, though, and he's like, hey, I know I've been here for a week saying the same fucking thing, and I live in this office, but Tail my wife, please. He comes in with a microphone on the brick wall background. Hey, tail my wife, please.
Crowd goes wild.
Yeah. So then we go, what is this? I have written Shatner and Spader have nonsense scene. Oh, yeah.
Is that the rabbit out of the hat stuff?
Oh, God. Yeah. So Shatner and Spader, and he's like talking about how Larry Miller went insane. He's like, Shatner's like, oh, yeah, it's because he's asking what's the point. Never ask what's the point. And then it's so stupid because he's like, yeah, tomorrow you're going to say that a black girl should have been cast as Annie. What's the point? It's like, well, presumably any case you do, the point is to either make money or to win the case. There's not a really tough question to me. Yeah. And so this is where I know Andrew probably already knows this, but this is where William Shatner reveals that the key to both life and trial law is pull a rabbit out of your hat, which I have to say is just a different version of surprise witnesses, each more surprising than the last.
So obviously that's an incredibly fucking stupid thing to say, but like it's such lazy script writing here too, because like they say there are two things they describe as rabbits, and like neither one is like a rat. It's just weird and dumb, and it kind of goes back to like Sam's point from the beginning, right? Which is it would be why I guess you both made this point, right? Like you could forgive, right, in the following the house model, right? Like you could forgive that these people are all insufferable, terrible assholes if they were also portrayed as being geniuses who are saving lives and like making the world a better place, but like they're not good lawyers either, right? Like,
no, it's a fucking disaster.
What does Spader's character do during that whole trial, whatever? He never says anything.
Yeah, you know nothing. What he does anything. Say? Well, actually, we'll get to that later, when the rest of it. He has one time he does any law thing, and it's to harass the judge, which is always a good – Andrew's taught us that it's always the best strategy is to be an asshole to the one person who's in charge of the fucking everything. That's a good – mm-hmm. Right, Andrew? I mean, you want to be just the biggest asshole to the judge as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Because almost every, as we've talked about, right, almost everything the judge does is within their discretion. And so, like, you really, really do not want to be on the losing end of somebody that can rule against you 50 different times and you've got no recourse for it. Yeah.
So then we get the, I think it's the scene where the asshole ex-husband is, again, it's just cartoon bad guy. As you say, it's the fucking... Billy Zane from, but worse. And he
this, with a this Snidely is, Whiplash.
I wrote down this line because I. So he's we find out, I guess, if they're like, we got to find some motivation for this fucking guy, because otherwise he's just Hitler. Like, there's no, he's just trying to be, he's like, oh, let's split up the twins. Let's just try that. Let's see what happens, because he's just evil. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, what's that Nazi movie where they have to choose between the kids? Sophie's Choice. Yeah, let's do that. Like, what the fuck, man? And then he said, so we find out, like, here's the actual motivation. He says, I used to have a wife who would have sex with me and go out with me at night. And then she turned into, and I quote, she turned into an Earth Mother world record setting breastfeeder.
Yeah.
What is that? What?
In his mind, he was okay with her breastfeeding a certain amount, but like, yeah, she went past the, his idea. I mean,
the only way it would make sense if he was like, yeah, there's seven and she's still breastfeeding him. Like, that one, then I would be like, okay, now I'm kind of sort of on his side. That is weird.
Yeah.
But like, what is that? The twins are, you know, they're like somewhere in the 7, 9, 10 range. She's not breastfeeding him. She's Jan from The Office. She's a good looking woman. There's nothing wrong with her. The fuck? Like,
and she became a doctor. You know, she like,
yeah. Yeah. The whole plot was she put him through asshole school, which was really, that was her mistake.
Graduated, she shouldn't have put top him through class.
Evil asshole, no, fuckface school.
Yeah. Oh, did, no, you catch her? She goes, no, he graduated for business school and then he was like in charge of a hedge fund or whatever right away. I was like, that's not, yeah, how the,
because that's
goes,
what happened to me when I graduated, yeah, business school. They're just like, hey, do you want to manage a hedge fund?
Yeah. Here, sure, here's your hedge fund.
Define hedge fund. I don't know.
I hope this hedge fund suits you. You know, you're, yeah, okay with this one.
No associate at this firm has ever failed the asshole exam.
Yeah. Oh, no associate of this, yeah, firm has ever failed in being the biggest fucking asshole of all time. Yeah, I don't. What firm? I don't even know what that means. Like, no part of her character has been Earth Mother. Like, she's trying.
No.
She became a doctor and apparently breastfed her kids. What the fuck is that? Who are now like 7, 8, 9 and has no factor into anything. It's the weirdest thing. What a stupid, that's what's so frustrating about the show. The writing is like, they kind of have a thought and then they just were like, ah, first idea. Don't even finish. Like, no editing, just whatever. Whatever you think of, just write.
Yeah, I'm sure, so, I've said this when we did any of these other movies, but how do they not have consultants, like law consultants, say, hey, we're thinking of doing this thing, and the person, you know, like Andrew would be like, well, no. Like, you could still do
yeah,
the whole idea you're trying to do. You could totally do it. We could, oh, make, yeah, some things sort of unrealistic, and, you know, you're always going to have the courtroom scenes where there's everyone yelling, and so, you know, because that's what people think is – that it just wouldn't, right, be fun to watch, like, one lawyer doing boring, you know, by himself or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like they're not even close. They don't even try.
No, this would not, I mean, this would be like if the three of us decided we were going to make a like comedy drama about plumbing, right? Like, and we're like, oh, do you think we should maybe bring a plumber on staff? And we're like, yeah, no, we'll just wing it. Like, it's pipes and water. How hard can it be, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's just,
and this, yeah, is ABC. Yeah. It's not like a startup. Like, hey, guys, the budget. We, yeah, just can't. We should have a really expensive,
yeah,
lawyer.
Not only that, they already have, this is a spinoff, so they should already have all that architecture ready of like, okay,
it's,
we know how the law
of
works.
A law show.
Yeah.
They have, it's good actors. Show. They have like everything,
oh,
else.
Great
is,
actors.
Yeah.
Fantastic the women actors.
Are, the women are,
they're all
unbelievably
good, like the
beautiful.
Pretty much everybody is a good actor. I strongly believe that. They're actually, yeah, they're actually pretty good. And they not only that, not only did they need a lawyer consultant, they need just a human consultant, like, hi, I'm a representative from humans. This is fucking stupid. No one would ever say Earth Mother record setting.
Yeah, and it's like anything. You're saying with the bad guy character. Okay, you're trying to establish that he's the biggest asshole ex-husband or whatever. Yeah. You already did it. Like, it's not. What is that extra stuff,
yeah,
doing?
They're like, he's not evil enough. We just can't, yeah, quite. Yeah.
The audience
he needs
hates
to separate
him already.
His twins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And weird. It gets worse. There's still more. So it's unclear whether it's like a day has passed or whatever. And this is where I had the note. Either Bookman lives there or he's, yeah, just back again. He's like, tail my wife, please. Did you hear the last time I made that joke? It was get killed.
Yeah, maybe he's the biggest client just from rent. Like, he's like, look, he's paying the entire lease. So he just, yeah, we have never, yeah, actually even done any legal work for him.
He's putting
just
my
utilities and water and. The internet, you should see his data usage. It's insane. Anyway.
Yeah, they make a killing off him on, like, the vending machines and stuff. Like
pay-per-view. He orders all the boxing fights on their TVs. Yeah.
So
vending machines. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's and I have another again. My theme of everything makes like 19% sense until you think about it. Here's an example of some more dialogue from the show. I had to write this down because it. So this scene is Bookman is directly talking to Shatner, and now Shatner's really got to get him off the tail my wife idea. So he says, "Oh, you're just trying to feel relevant, you know." And he goes, "Quote: If you want to feel relevant, move to Florida, punch a Chad,
yeah.
Screw up an election."
Timely humor.
Am I stupid or does that make no fucking sense? Like there's a, it's like someone said, what's Florida election that in 2000? Okay. It's 2004. Well, it still works. Just, but like, what would that, how would you feel relevant if you moved to punch a, there's no logic to it. It's no. Just a, it's a reference, a bare bones, no logic, anything. I don't get it. Are you going to tell me, Andrew, that this somehow makes sense?
Oh, no. I had really 2000 election joke like too soon. Come on. Mm-hmm.
But it does. There's no logic to the joke.
No, it's just
Florida.
It's like
elections.
Yeah. It is exactly like if this plot were written like 4 years earlier and nobody updated it, right? Like it's the kind of thing you might say to throw in to be like, oh, see, hey, we, you know, we are culturally relevant here, but you know,
yeah, but it's not like the attention in Florida wasn't, let's meet all the people who punched a Chad and screw what? It's so fucking stupid. God, I hate stuff like this. It's the kind of thing where it's like dumb people are like, oh yeah, Florida is an election. Like, no, that doesn't make sense. None of that makes sense.
They're in a room and they're like, I'll say to you, old people and Florida, what is the first thing?
Election. Chad. He
said white pants. Punch. And punch. Whatever, you know?
Okay, I'm hearing punch. Something? I'm hearing a lot of punching.
Yeah.
Wasn't it hanging Chads was the thing anyway? I don't remember
right.
Punching
Yeah, there was
Chads.
No punching Chads.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, we're older. That even work. We're older, so we remember these things. I'm with you on this one.
Now,
thank you.
So now I love this because now it looks like, and Andrew, I can't wait. Andrew usually tells me that I'm wrong and when I think something's wrong, and that's fine.
Interesting.
But now it looks as though Jack and Lake Bell are arguing in front of a 3-judge panel for whether or not Jan can take her kids out of state. What's happening here?
I gotta say, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, it looks totally fucking nuts, but like if you told me in Boston that there's some like municipal court where 3 judges sit to hear custody,
but only
like,
one talks, by the way,
I would feel pretty confident, like 99.9% confident that they're not gonna pay 2 extra judges to sit there to rule on these mundane cases. Yeah. Right, like
we just want them for background, like, we just you know,
yeah. Make it look more lawy. Right?
Atmosphere.
They only had 1 judge. I want 3 in there. Come on. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't have like, you know, 4 or, you know, have it before the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Right? What are they doing?
Have them all in just black robes. Just, you know.
So, and the whole thing of this is the judge is like, look, the husband is the worst ever. We all, our 3-judge panel agrees, husband, worst fucking guy. We hate him. He's the worst. However, this no taking kids out of state rule is, you know, that's a firm rule. So she can't take the kids out of state.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
I mean, I guess I could imagine that. I don't know.
That's probably not a thing, but I don't know.
Yeah. So then we cut. God. Then we cut to the musical Annie. The black girl's singing Tomorrow in talent court. And the judge is like loving it. They're just, you know. The judge is Maria Bartiromo at her in her prime.
Oh man, what a babe!
Pretty good looking. Yeah, she used to be. Now she's just a fucking Trump loving piece of crap.
Sorry, I choose to remember mid '90s money. Yeah. What the money, honey? What was
money,
it?
CNN money, something or Fox money. So, I don't know. Yeah, she used to be really good looking. Anyway, but so the judge and we get some comedy because the judge is like, "Oh, that's good," and then she goes around for another, you know, finale of Tomorrow. I'll be honest, it's a little shouty for my taste. I don't know, Andrew. How much talent law do you know? It's a little shouty.
Well, I think it's meant to be played because she's obviously really, really good.
Right.
But there's certainly like a moment in the show in which there's almost some fourth wall breaking in which they're like,
yeah,
you know, I could ask her to sing Annie again. Yeah.
Had they panned over to the to the bench or whatever, and it was Simon Cowell, it would have fit in to the show. Like it wouldn't have been more ridiculous than other things that are about to happen pretty soon.
But you didn't. I mean, we previewed this before. This is when we get the fantastic line of the judge saying, "Well, you were really good, but you know that other girl that we all definitely just heard just before you was good too."
She's like, "Everybody, like, wave goodbye to the real Annie. Bye, real Annie. Okay, that was pretty good." Yeah, it's weird. They weirdly didn't show the other girl ever.
I was like, "Could you not find a white girl to?" That could sing anywhere in Hollywood.
It's weird that no one ever says anything about like singing is not the only part of the whole role. Like you have to be able to act. Like it's just based on who can sing tomorrow better is how they cast the someone who's acting in like a 2 hour.
And I love the idea production. That like there's the judge is about to rule. Like God, it's so fucking stupid. The judge is like picking up the gavel and like going. Well, she's good, but the white girl was also good, so I'm afraid I'll have to rule, dot, dot, dot. And then, fucking Al Sharpton, this is real, you might think I'm making this up. Al Sharpton barges into the courtroom, and is like, can I have a word with it, whatever. And he gives an impassioned speech. The judge, to be fair to Maria Bartiromo in the 90s, she's like, hey, don't, you're not involved in this. For a second, she's like, you don't have any
power here,
standing here. Yeah. And then he's like, shut up. I'm talking. I'm Al Sharpton. And he gives, and again, he's actually, to be honest with you, like he gives a good performance of Al Sharpton. Some people can't even be themselves in a show. Like they're awkward and awful. He actually gives a good Al Sharpton impression. And he gives this speech. And then at the end, the courtroom bursts into applause. Burst into applause. Give us a black Spider-Man. Give us a black Superman. Let a black man leap buildings in a single bound. As though that makes any fucking sense for talent court. God.
It's like they tried to turn it into a landmark case at the very end of it or whatever. And it never was and it never would be. Like if that
again,
was really
the
case. Again,
we haven't even established that there is a trial happening. Yeah. Like it's just a hearing for something. I don't even know. Oh, God, it's so dumb. And then, of course, when he's done, Al Sharpton has to say to James Spader, that's what you call a rabbit, son. Oh, Denny Crane. And again, that's the line. That's what you call a rabbit, son. Denny Crane, which is Shatner's character name. He just says his name. Like, in case audience, in case you didn't understand, William Shatner was the one who somehow set this up. Like, he just says Denny Crane. God. So fucking stupid.
And they don't, am I wrong or just, they don't even, after that, they don't even make it clear that anything even happened as a result of that. You don't even know, like, did they win whatever or
which,
not?
Which, to be fair, what would have happened, I guess, well, first off, the judge would have just been like, bailiff, get this person the fuck out of the thing. You can't, allow.
Amusingly enough, judges are really, really good at not letting people come in and just grandstand in their courtroom for 10 minutes. Because they control the people with the guns. So that's fun. But we do get the resolution, right? Like we see them negotiate.
Well, I'm saying is they cut out the end of the courtroom scene, which would have been the judge saying, okay, well, that has no fucking bearing on anything. Well, as I was about to say before this criminal who barged in here, who's now in jail, by the way, he's going to sit in jail for a little while for barging into a courtroom. What I was about to say is talent court rules that they're
this is a huge waste of my time and we can't decide anything. You guys work it out.
Yeah.
There's a great line in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is an aside where it says, and the judge, in an astonishing display, ruled that life itself was in contempt of court and summarily removed it from everyone in the room. And I was really, really hoping that we could have that right here.
But I kind of want to get, can you even explain, because in earlier conversations, James Spader
I'm going to go with no, but yeah, ask.
James Spader is like, I'm not going to win because there's no state action. We're trying to prove, what is he even, What was that about? There's all this state action stuff. Like, what?
Yeah, because the writers confuse, right? Because James Spader starts spouting nonsense about equal protection. And
oh,
like,
yeah, by the way, sorry. I meant to say that. James Spader did, as I said earlier, the brilliant legal move. As the judge was about to rule, he said, oh, have you ever heard of Judge the 14th, or what is it, the 5th, what did he say? Which amendment?
I think he says the 14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment, yeah, which I'm pretty sure is required reading for judges. I could be wrong about that. Like, excellent and, legal move, you fucking dweeb.
And that would require state action, right? Like, because private companies don't have to abide by the 14th Amendment. But we have laws that prohibit discrimination in employment,
right?
And that's what this would be under, right? Like, this would, and so you could have had the exact same thing. And look, I have to tell you, I honestly don't know if getting a part in a play when you're a juvenile would fall under the employment statutes, right? Like, I can see arguments that it should, right? Like, presumably these plays, you know, have some potential monetary value, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you get paid.
You could have, you could have had an interesting clash here, right? Like, again, it would not have been hard to rewrite this in a way that would have preserved the core of the argument without being incredibly fucking stupid, but you know, they didn't. So yeah, so he's dumb. Like nattering on about like, well, we don't have any state action, but we did get Al Sharpton to come in and parody himself.
Well, no, it sounds as though James Spader didn't. He had no plan, like because as Al Sharpton says, Denny Crane, which I guess means that Denny Crane arranged this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So Spader had no fucking plan. He's the world's worst attorney, and it only works out because Denny Crane did this theatrics with Al Sharpton. So it's stupid on all fronts. Then we get to a scene that just frustrated me so much, because Lake Bell needs to know if Jack from Days of Our Lives is into her. And my response is, when a Lake Bell asks you if you want to go out, you say, yes,
yes.
That's all I could think of. God, what is that scene where Lake fucking Bell is like, hey, see this guy propping up my cleavage? Yeah, ignore that. But anyway, are you into me? Or are you? And she's like likable too. She's a good lawyer. She's a, you know, working for the top firm that's asshole.
Do we know, right? Because the only thing that I could, because I too was puzzled by this scene, and the only thing I could think of is that Mr. Days of Our Lives is married.
Yeah,
like,
that's
maybe
kinda
that
what I was thinking.
Kinda what they were going for.
They didn't give us anything. You know, I have no idea.
No, they gave us nothing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, clearly she slept with both him and James Spader, right? Because the movie very helpfully tells us that by having James Spader shout it in the middle of the room.
I didn't think that exactly.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Because like then we skip to Lake Bell is now like kind of on a date with James Spader.
Yeah.
But again, this is time number 7 when James Spader is his typical fucking psychopath self. And why would anyone ever talk to him? Ever? Like she's trying to... Lake Bell is like burying her heart. She's like, oh, I'm really this case. I'm worried about it. Can you believe that this, you know, this guy wants to separate these kids? And he's like, oh, you're talking about a case. You're worried about, like, he's just dismissive. Like, I can't even believe you're fucking talking about what your feelings are. Like, no one would ever like this guy or spend any time with him.
Yeah,
I refuse
confide
to believe
in
it.
Him.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and he's got this whole thing about Jack from Days of Our Lives where he's like, oh, he's such a Ken doll and he works out. And he's like, oh, this is the funny James Spader line to Lake Bell. Oh, do you think I should work out with weights or do some calisthenics?
Jeez.
Like, what?
Well, that whole scene was just to set up, you know, the douchebag being at the bar. But they couldn't think of any. They couldn't think of any realistic reason that he would be there at the same time as the other guy.
But like any time James Spader said anything in the firm or in the company anywhere, you just be like, oh, you're a douchebag. You're a douchebag. You're a douchebag. Douchebag says what? Oh, that's a douchebag. You're a douchebag. That would be any time he opened his mouth.
I don't want to lose Sam's point there because it's even more ridiculous than that, right? Like, so this scene is contrived to get James Spader, Lake Bell, and Snidely Whiplash all in the same bar.
Right.
And the script itself rebels against this, right? Like Bell goes, oh, come on. Like, Boston is a big city.
Town
like,
is Boston?
This wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she literally A, she bends over a lot, and then B, like, turns to look at the camera and go, oh, come on, this wouldn't really happen.
Yeah. She's like, are we really going with this? Is this where we're going? Okay, all right. I guess. And so, yeah, the dirtbag ex-husband is there hitting on women, which, I mean, he is divorced. So
yeah, he's divorced. Like, why is that? I mean, yeah, anyway.
Okay, just a single guy, I think, but... so, but then you can see that, James Spader is plotting. He grabs her BlackBerry. Like, he uses her BlackBerry. It's fucking, nothing makes any sense. And so, Shatner and Lori have a scene. Now, this is weird. There's something that I'll never understand, because Lori asks William Shatner for no reason. Hey, are you scared? Like, for not just nothing. And he's like, what? And he's like, because I guess it's because Larry Miller went nuts or something.
Yeah, I
don't
think
know.
So.
And so this is where this is where the show really wants to hammer on the point that, like, Shatner is a great lawyer, because he's like, he literally said, they put in his mouth the line, I'm Denny Crane. I'm Denny fucking Crane. Like, they're over and over. He's like, I'm Denny Crane, in case anybody didn't know. So more on that scene at the end, because something... later on, they call back to it incorrectly, and it's blowing my mind. So, anyway, then we get James Spader barging into the worst guy ever, Billy Zane's place of work. And, again, more lines that make no fucking sense. So Spader has these pictures, like it's a fucking 30s film noir, you know, like detective movie, like it's... it's like Who Framed Roger Rabbit with the picture, you know, the full printouts. And he's telling the asshole ex, like, oh, I got all these pictures. Which, by the way, his story is, I know this prostitute. Like, I sleep with her all the time. So somehow.
Yeah, it's frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, he says. Frequent flyer miles.
He says that.
Yes. Yeah. So somehow that allows, there must be a third person taking pictures? It's never explained. So somehow that
yeah,
means.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, like she's got the place bugged or something, like with spy cameras? Because
all your best prostitutes do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got pictures of the guy. And here's what he says. This is a real line. I particularly like this one. It gives your bottom a nice aura. That's the line they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
What? No one would ever fucking say that. God, gives your bottom a nice aura. Yeah, that's great. He saw.
It's just so the audience knows he's naked in there. He's like, yeah, it's super embarrassing.
Yeah, wouldn't he just be like, hey, nice unit, man. Mm-hmm. Good one. Looking.
I was hoping for the John Candy movie where he's the private investigator, but he's the totally inept. And
sounds like another thing from when I was either negative two or
Uncle Buck.
No, it's before Uncle Buck. But anyway, and he keeps looking over at his word of the day calendar, so he gets words wrong, and he's like, "Have you ever seen such a pathetic little?" And then he looks over it, and the word he comes up with is fallacy. But anyway,
so and then we're back to Bookman. We get the climax with Bookman here. And Bookman wants a word with Shatner. And this is where we find out in dramatic fashion that Bookman had hired a PI of his own. And he found out about William Shatner. What's that?
Again, if you're trying to follow the plot of this story, which, in fairness, why would you do that? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing that any rational person would say 2 minutes into this episode. Like, oh, my lawyer's not going to hire the PI. Yeah. I really want my lawyer to hire the PI. I've asked, okay, well, then I'll just hire the goddamn PI myself.
And by the way, it's never explained if Shatner, like, is still sleeping with her. And so he was caught, you know, seen, or if the PI, like, somehow detective skills found out it was him. Like, that's never really explained. We don't know how he found that out. Like, you know, this is before Facebook. You know, it's not like there was a social media picture of them together. I don't know how that, whatever.
Yeah, and maybe this is too much to ask, but once you were alerted that your top client of your firm was going to, you know, this was all going on.
Yeah.
Oh, let's cool it. Like, we'll just, you know, we better not be seen forever.
It's not like they're going to uncover text messages. You know, I don't understand. They never explain it. But so now we get what almost could be an interesting scene. Almost.
Yeah.
Bookman pulls a gun on him. And he, God, this is such a fucking great, stupid Shatner line. Shatner's like, clients come in here all the time wanting to shoot me.
Yeah. I wrote down, I believe that.
Yeah. And he says, you know what I tell them? Go ahead. And then he gives a speech about how, again, as we established a few scenes ago, he's fucking Denny Crane. This is Denny fucking Crane. I mean,
he runs the city. He even says that.
Yeah, he owns the city.
Yeah, owns the city.
Stupid. And Denny fucking Crane is such a legend that he would rather be shot, be gunned down by his own client so that he'd at the top of his game, you know, he'd go down in history as a legendary lawyer rather than like fall off, you know, kind of just be, you know, not be at his peak, just kind of
show up one day with his pants off, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, all right, whatever, kind of interesting. And then Bookman is like going to call his bluff. He's like, all right, well, then I will shoot you. But don't you want to apologize first?
Well, he does like several different cocking scenes. There's like the hammer down halfway. He spins the thing, the little revolver shaft. He blows on the end, rubs the handle several different ways. Like there's so many parts.
So then we get, this is like the scene was at a really bad improv troupe where they're like coming up with how to end it. Because I'm not even joking. He's like, here's the lines. I wrote down most of them. He says, pull the trigger. You know, he's like, all right, before I do, don't you at least want to apologize? And Shatner says, I do. I'm sorry, Ernie. And then he says, you know, I bought that gun for you, right? It's a starter pistol, Ernie. So with that, he turns this potentially tense, you know, kind of interesting scene into a fucking joke. It's the dumbest fucking thing. So a starter fucking pistol? The backstory of why Denny fucking Crane bought a starter pistol for his top client? Was it like, you know how we're always breaking into full-on 100-meter dash races all the time, you and I? Well, now we can really make it fun. Yeah. I got you this.
This is like example number 11 in this episode where if you stop to think about the movie for a tenth of or the episode for a tenth of a second.
Hey, I noticed you've been really into regattas lately, so I got you this.
It's a starter pistol. Why?
Or it's like he's the guy. You know, there's some guys who give everybody the same shitty gift. Like they just buy a million of a thing. And they're like, hey, starter pistols for everybody. Everybody in the office gets starter pistols. You know how often we all use starter pistols in our daily lives. I bought you this starter pistol.
I don't even. It has absolutely no possible explanation to be believable at all. Yeah, like you said, are they racing? And like they should have had a scene somewhere in the middle where they just race at a track, and then Shatner's like, yeah, I beat you again. And the other guy's like, I think you got a head start. Like, I don't know. I don't think we're starting at the same time.
How do we know when to start at the same
time? So you're saying is they needed Chekhov's regatta at the beginning or something like that. Oh, God.
So at the end, you'd be like, okay, bottom of the starter pistol.
See, the whole starter pistol thing pays off. Yeah, exactly.
He's our biggest client. He's in charge of the Olympic Committee on early on.
And I guess you're not trying to have what's his name, the biggest client, Bookman. I guess you don't need to establish him as being like a not a mentally retarded person or whatever. But at that point, you're like, the guy brought a starter pistol in to shoot, like,
yeah, like he was just gonna scare
fucking
him,
idiot.
I guess.
Yeah, I don't even. Yeah.
Like he's so dumb that he doesn't know,
because he looks at the gun afterwards, like, oh yeah, what am I doing here? It's so weak. Because, like you said, it is kind of – it could be a tense, like, good scene.
Yeah.
And it ruined –
No, but then, again, they let your friend's terrible improv troupe finish the scene. It's a starter pistol. And also, we're in a cafe, and it's a
it's a tornado.
I'm actually holding a monkey on my – oh, this monkey's on my back, and we got – yeah, like, just random bullshit.
My drink was too hot.
Yeah.
Burned my tongue.
All right, we need an occupation. Somebody throw out an occupation and a –
So stupid. So I forgot to mention this earlier, but this has nothing to do with anything, but I was watching this upstairs on my computer because we had the file or whatever, and my wife was watching TV downstairs. And after the thing was over, I walked downstairs, and she didn't know what I was doing, you know? And I said, oh, my God, I just watched the worst thing. And she was like, oh, is that why you said, oh, my God, like five times? I didn't know what was going on up there. And I had headphones on. Like, yeah. I didn't really realize that whatever I was doing was audible, and I didn't remember saying, oh my God. But she's like, yeah, you said, oh my God, five times when you were up there.
That's
40
funny.
Minutes.
Anyway. I had a sort of similar thing in that I was, well, I thought Lydia was asleep because I watched it, you know, the second time I watched it pretty late. And then I get a text from Lydia at like, you know, 12:30 or whatever. And she's like, I would recognize Annie anywhere. And she thought I was watching Annie. Like, I just decided, you know, late night, just going to turn on Annie, the musical.
Friday night, Annie watching.
Yeah. So then we go to Jack and Lori talking. God, this is
There's
so
There's more
weak.
Show still?
There's a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
then we get
be
a callback to something that wasn't significant at all. And you, and like, it took me the second time through to even know what they were trying to do. Because Jack is like, let me ask you something. He's really concerned. He's like, do I talk too fast?
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah, what did that have to do? And it turns out in the like the second scene of the show with Jack, he like tries to make – he does what a human would do in the face of James Spader, a fucking psychopath. And he's like, hey, man, let me – I just want to be open. My rule is like I want to be open, and if there's something, let me know if there's something going on between that kind of thing. And he says it a little bit fast. And then – hilariously, James Spader is like, I can't understand language that fast. And then nothing becomes of it until the like the end of the show. He's like, do I talk too fast? Like anyone? What?
I wrote down he doesn't talk fast and tries to talk
and he
fast
doesn't.
But still isn't talking fast.
Yeah.
Like in that scene, he's trying to make up for like, my character's been talking slow this entire show, but now I'll try to talk yeah, exactly. faster and he can't even
he
do it.
He doesn't talk fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
So dumb.
What a weird
And by
thing.
The way, they're drinking beers. So the two of them are drinking beers. And then, again, what is this building there? Because Jan just waltzes in. Because I don't know, is it after hours? Are they at home? Are they waiting? Wait, there's drinking beers. Jan waltzes in and is like, hey, guys, you know, questionable decision on the blackmail, but thanks for doing it. Really appreciate the blackmail you did on my ex. And of course, you know, that means Jack's like, oh, I can't believe Spader must have done this. Blackmailing. And then, okay, so here's what is just blowing my mind. Because we get the last scene is such a fucking piece of shit. It's Spader and Shatner out on the roof. And William Shatner's like, remember that book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? And Spader's like, yep.
My God.
And then nothing. He's like, is there a point or do you just want to know if I've read it? And then Shatner says, there you go again, always looking for a point. And that's it.
And then, yeah, they never finish that.
Nothing. Nothing to do with anything. And okay, this is the weirdest thing ever. I tried several times. First off, I checked if there was subtitles in this file we all had. Because, by the way, you can't find this fucking piece of shit anywhere. It's not on any of the streaming services. I checked if there's subtitles. There weren't. It took me five times through to I think I know what he says. So Jack comes out to the roof. And Jack is like, hey, man, I don't agree with your blackmail tactics kind of thing. And in proper piece of shit callback fashion, James Spader says, it was a rabbit. Well, really, a bunny. Marines don't like bunnies? That's what I think the line is. Yeah. Marines don't like bunnies? And that's, I guess, saying that Jack, it's along the lines of the Ken doll. Jack is like, too good looking and works out joke. It's not.
Wow.
It's
I
not
remember
anything.
The bunnies, but I didn't remember the Marines part, but it didn't
I,
matter.
I had, again, I didn't understand what he was even fucking saying. And I had to know, I was like, what is this? Marines don't like bunnies. That's not God. How would you participate in this show? I couldn't do it. If I was an actor, I got hired. This is my big break. I'm on a fucking Boston Legal, main network. I'd be like, I can't do this. I can't, this, Marines don't like bunnies. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, all they had to do with, okay, Jack is good looking and Spader's not, and that's it. That's all they had to do, really. Like the whole talking fast and all that stuff, like, what is, yeah, it doesn't even, you don't need any of that. It doesn't
but
even make
and
sense.
It doesn't combine well because Spader's whole fucking deal as a person and an actor is that he's maximally self-confident and arrogant. Like the look on his face and the way he talks is that he rules the world. Like he single-handedly controls time, space, and matter and is in charge of everything in the world. But then the lines are that he's super insecure about how good-looking Jack is the whole time. And he can't do both things. Like, it doesn't, it's like he's better than Jack because he's not good look. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make
any
sense.
And we don't need any of this as a subplot anyway. Right?
I don't need any of this at all.
But, like, we're struggling to figure out, like, well, how could we maximize the drama between, James Spader and you're like, wait, why? Who said?
Well, but
why,
like,
why
would,
should
okay.
we have that?
I could
why
believe
people,
it.
Why should the people who work together hate each other? Right? Like, who
well,
said?
No, no.
That's what
here,
I want to see.
Here's where
in my,
you know how we
movie.
Sometimes legally make stuff better. I could human wise make stuff better. I think Spader's character is like that irritating guy who's like, he always thinks he's friend zoned, you know, like he's like, oh, I'm a nice guy, whatever, but he's actually not. And he doesn't understand why Lake Bell is not into him. Like, that's how it would make sense. If he was like kind of an asshole and not confident, like he was like, oh, just that guy's so good looking. You're always into that guy. But it doesn't work because he plays it like he's a fucking the ruler of the world. Like he couldn't have more confidence. And like self-assuredness, it's so dumb.
I'm going to make an insane statement. I'm afraid what your response is going to be. But at the end of this thing, I think we're almost to the end. I want to watch the second episode. Do you have the second episode? I just, because of that kind of stuff, I wanted to see, like, is this going to do anything? Because I can't, it's hard to watch the pilot with all these things that they're obviously doing wrong. But like, I have to. Does he and Jack? Do he and Jack get into a love triangle with whatever the girl's name you said? That's right. The only possible thing. I almost need to see what happens, just so I could fully understand.
Right in, everybody.
Now I think I know why this show lasted for five seasons and 300 episodes.
Well, you can just ask Lydia's grandma because this is apparently her favorite show of all time. So,
did you guys have that feeling at all that you wanted to see the second episode? Honestly.
I would
just for fun. Not like it's a good show, but you know.
Just like it's the dumbest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, you kind of want to see how stupid it is. Like, I kind of want to see it.
Okay,
I would put that somewhere below going to a Pauly Shore concert, but you know, on my list.
Yeah.
Last insult to injury. The last part of the show, of this episode. So Jack and whoever, Laurie or whatever, they leave. And we're just left with Spader and Shatner. And James Spader says, you know, you never answered my question the other night. Are you scared? I'm like, that wasn't you, though. That was Lori. Lori asked, are you scared? What is this some weird fucking Sixth Sense ending where, like, Lori and James Spader are the same person the whole time? Like, what? That wasn't you. Am I crazy?
No. You're not only are you not crazy. I had the same note, right? Then James Spader whispers, "I'm Denny Crane again." I honestly think, I swear to God, I honestly think what happened here is that accidentally James Spader got Tommy Lahren's notes, right? Like, like it was he was reading her lines from the script, and everyone was like, "Eh, just go with it. Who the fuck cares? We're not gonna reshoot the last 2 minutes of this piece of shit. They're
so
not picking
weird.
It up." Like, it makes no sense.
Why did he say I'm Denny Crane, and then Denny Crane was like, "What?" And he goes, "Never mind." Was that what happened?
Yeah,
what
that's exactly what happened.
That?
And it only makes
sense. No, he doesn't
sense.
Say I'm Denny Crane.
Oh,
he just
Denny
says
Crane.
Denny Crane.
Oh yeah, right. He's right.
Because, I mean, it's fucking Denny Crane. He's a legend, so.
Why would James Spader's character
say that? But the only way
that
makes sense, yeah. He wouldn't. Tommy Lahren would say that because he whispered that to her three scenes ago. It's so
weird.
It's crazy.
This show went five seasons. It's like, who makes this shit? Can't they try? Oh. Can anyone
and one
try?
Of our patrons, I want to point out, one of our patrons sent us a message somewhere that was like, Boston Legal is my favorite show, so I'm going to stop being a patron if you do it on Law.
Oh, my God.
Well, sorry, dude. Like, sorry. I hate that we're losing your buck, but this show
it must
is a piece of shit.
People who like that character of like an unredeemable asshole who I guess says things that they think are funny. I don't know.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, you know, Seinfeld, the first season, it's not very good. Like, maybe they figured it out or something. There's no way this is the show for five seasons. I'll watch the whole thing. I'll let you guys know.
All right. There we go. All right. Sam has homework.
Sam's own podcast.
And I think that's now my new favorite line from this record, quote, there's no way that this is the show.
They can't. There's no way. Impossible.
Oh, my God. Andrew, let's do the thing we've tried to do every time. Where's this rank on Law for you?
This has got to be tied with Jury Duty. There's literally no moment in this entire episode that resembles The Law. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
Like it's orthogonal to The Law. Like I couldn't possibly rate it on a 0 to 10.
Yeah, is there a
10.
Single thing that's yeah. done correctly?
No, there is not.
Nothing.
It's really bad on The Law.
Wow.
The one thing that is semi-correct is the resolution to the little orphan Annie bit, right? Like,
oh yeah, we kind of skipped over that. I forgot to say.
Yeah,
that.
You see, well, that's fault. Believe me, we don't need to.
Yeah,
go there,
they do like, a whole settlement. Which, by the way, they could have fixed this fucking nonsense bullshit and not had Al Sharpton barge into a courtroom for a hearing that makes no sense. That's not a trial or anything. They could have just had him, you know, at the courthouse steps or at the whatever. He could have just made a speech somewhere. And then the story could have been, hey, you're getting a lot of bad press for what happened here. So how about we settle up? You don't need a... God, it's so tacky. Al Sharpton barges into the courtroom. Oh, my God.
So you have to get it. You have to leave aside that's the predicate, which is insane, right? Like literally having the Great Gazoo show up and like magic it into happening would be no less ridiculous than the Al Sharpton thing. But if you leave that aside, the conversation they have to settle that is kind of real, like is exactly what
would
happen.
Which, by the way, the settlement is horrible. She said that here's what they I meant to say this. And, you know, it doesn't take much theater knowledge to know this is pretty bad. So this is they reference it. This is like a major production. This is 8 shows a week. So you do for people who don't know, I think you usually are off like Tuesday or Monday and Tuesday and you do double shows on Saturday, Sunday. And that adds up to like 8 a week, something like that. Usually that's like the typical, you know, major Broadway, whatever run. And so they're negotiating after, I guess, in this universe, Al Sharpton just delivered the crushing blow to the case. We don't find out if there's any legal thing that happened. So they're going to settle or something. And they say, we'll let her understudy on weekends, which...
That was the first offer, yeah.
Understudy on week, which... So you have two understudies, like they couldn't even have, whatever. So you have two understudies, which, in a major production, 8 shows a week, the understudy is going to go on from time to time. It's not, you know, so like you get to, but understudy on weekends. And then she says, I want 3 matinees a month. And I don't know how they arrived at that number, but then that's, and they're like, deal. So like she's understudying, but then she gets to play 3 mat. I don't know. It's fucking, it makes no sense. Like there's got to be a better. That's like the worst offer ever.
That's what I wrote really down. Bad offer. Like, they tried to make it into this. Yeah, like Al Sharpton comes in, all that, and then they just instantly settle for like, no, the other girl's the real thing. Cave. And you're just, we'll just throw you some crap.
There's no talk of money, by the way. Like, oh, how much am I getting paid for this, or what? You know.
And the mom's like super happy about it. Like, you didn't even get. Isn't it more than just the part? Isn't it like some justice? You know, some like it's a racial thing and. For us, like watching it, like, oh, they, you know, they didn't even win. It's so weird.
Still, we still don't know what happened in the courtroom. There's no answer to that. Yeah. Anyway, all right. In terms of overall quality, as I said, top, probably tied with Jury Duty for how irritating this show was. It's pretty maximally irritating. Like every single facet of it was the most annoying thing I've ever seen. But in terms of overall quality, I don't know. Somewhere with Jury Duty. It's really bad.
So bad.
Yeah, it's
any
it's
thoughts on that,
really bad. Yeah, no, I don't think I can add to that, right? Like it's The Law is it's on a par with Judge Dredd, right? Like if they had come out and instead of being set in, you know, Boston Legal, it was Mega City One Legal, like it would be no less nonsensical, you know? So
And then if we want to invent another category of eye candy, I would say number one. Like they're most
those girls are really
hot
pretty.
Female attorneys of any show ever or movie.
Yeah. Amazing. Why could this not have had the hot wax scene in it?
I think we know why it went 5 seasons. It's because everyone's really good looking.
Yeah.
That's must be it. All right. Well, that was fun. Thanks, Sam. Hey, Sam, do you have any podcasts or anything where people could find you?
Yeah. Well, if anyone's still listening at the end here. You just cut this to the end. No, just kidding. Yeah, we do a comedy shoeshine, you and I. Andrew needs to come on sometime. He's got to have some good jokes for us, some good stories. Anyways.
You'd think I'd be due by now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, find us over at Comedy Shoeshine. And thanks so much, patrons, for listening, supporting the show. Hope you enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. It's the right kind of bad to make fun of. God, yeah. It was so bad.
Yes, absolutely.
And sorry to the patron we lost, but sorry, you're wrong. The show sucks. nothing to say there. You're wrong, and we'll refund you your money because the show is terrible.
Amen.